Hello, homies. Welcome to Easily Entertained. I am your host, Maddie McClain. It's so good to be sitting down here with you guys once again to go over shenanigans that is going on in the entertainment and pop culture world around us. This is a moment to kind of take a break from what else is going on in reality. The intention behind this podcast really is to entertain you and to kind of turn off your brain for a little bit, because sometimes, at least I know for sure that there are times where my brain is, okay, constantly running a million miles a minute, just boom, 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 probably also the ADHD, but you know what I mean? Sometimes it's nice to give your brain a little spa day, if you will. So it's kind of my favorite part of reality TV and just staying up in pop culture world is because it provides a little bit of a humorous break from real life and the menacing intrusive thoughts going on in my brain. But I digress. This week we are talking reality TV. There is so much going down. We will be talking about Love is Blind and another lawsuit that is coming their way from this most recent season, and give you a little bit of commentary on this latest season. Then we'll cover Golden Bachelor, our boy Gary, and Bachelor in Paradise, followed by some little newsy pop culture updates, in particular, Sam Bankman-Fried, the fallen CEO of FTX and Alameda Research, who is actually, the trial is currently happening right now. He has basically defrauded people out of like billions and billions of dollars in the crypto industry. So little something there, but mind you, I am not an expert on crypto. So it will be a very beginner coverage of that intricacies of that portion, just throwing it out there. You know what I'm saying? Self-awareness is key, folks. Self-awareness. I swear, there are too many people that lack this. I read something that only 20% of the population is self-aware. That tracks, honestly. That pretty much tracks. But it's also mind-boggling because for me, I'm way too self-aware. You know what I mean? Like, constant self-critiquing and are they gonna like look at these headphones? I look like a nerd. Like, oh no, I said nerd. What are they gonna think? Do I hate nerds? Do I hate smart people? You know what I mean? All right, I'll take you right out of those. I'll take you right out of that anxious thought loop. So buckle on up, folks, and we'll let's get started. Let's entertain this bitch. So this previous weekend, I went to Austin City Limits for the, I think I was counting like 16th time or something. It sounds to me, I say that because it doesn't sound impressive. It honestly sounds a little, I don't know. I don't know if I love people knowing that, but I guess if you grew up here and you live here, you know what I'm saying. But there are so many other music festivals that I have yet to attend that I will be attending, including Lollapalooza, Bonnaroo. I haven't done Coachella either. So I know. I got lots of catching up to do. But it was a great weekend. Every time I go to a music fest, the following week, I feel je ne sais quoi. I feel like shit. You know what I'm saying? It's a marathon. It is no sprint and it is not for the faint of heart, but it is for those that are cool people. It was fun. All right. That's the bottom line. Kendrick Lamar really pulled a fast one on us all. So if you are not aware or you did not go, Kendrick Lamar was Friday night's headliner and he was slated to start at around 8:40. And I mean, it's Kendrick and it's a musician. Musicians are going to musician. So we're all expecting him to show up late. Like that's pretty much a given, right? I mean, that's not that crazy of a thing. We're all standing there. Meanwhile, across the field, across the park, is the Lumineers. I love the Lumineers, but I love Kendrick more. And it's just different vibes. You know what I'm saying? I wasn't in the vibe for like cry sad time at a festival. It just doesn't really go well for me. So we're waiting. It's tick, tick, tick. It's like 9:15. Everyone's kind of looking around at each other like, do we bail? Still stand there. People are committed. It's a huge crowd. And then a message pops up on the screens that says, due to plane issues, Kendrick Lamar will be playing an abbreviated set that starts at 9:45 p.m. A little over an hour. He showed up on stage even after that. A lot of people kind of had started to head out before then. And what ACL did to like distract us all, like little sheep that we are, they put on some drone show. And at first, my ass was like, oh my God, Kendrick Lamar is doing this? He's such a jokester. He's going to be dropped out of a drone. That's not a thing that happens ever. But I thought maybe he's going to like appear. You know what I'm saying? Like he was just toying with our emotions. No, he didn't appear. It was ACL. And they like spelled out ACL in the sky. And I mean, I'm not going to lie, it was pretty sick. But I'd rather see Kendrick Lamar than ACL's drone show. So that distracted us. It was like finding little, like giving little kids an iPad at dinner time. Like, anyway, finally Kendrick shows up and I'm so glad that I did not leave. He put on, for as long as he could, he put on a great show. It was the shortest set of a headliner in ACL history. So that's fun. But he did do back to back to back, all heavy hitters, you know, most popular songs and such for about 30 minutes until he gets the song, we gonna be all right. We gonna be all right. You know what I'm saying? We gonna be all right. And the city of Austin, there's a curfew at 10 p.m. So they just cut off the mic. Everything, lights come down. Never saw his dancers. It was like he had a ton of dancers back there. And I've heard that his entire show is set is like really good. I caught him a few years back. I don't even remember how long this was, but he's been at ACL before. But that was a bummer. He did well. Like it was great, but I'm like, maybe I come back next Friday to see him again. I don't know. But turns out, well, first of all, let's talk about plane issues. Our friend Kendrick is flying private. He can't take Delta, you know, like he can't fly Delta. Everybody would lose their shit. But so that's annoying. First of all, like, I don't know. I feel like that's a lot easier to fix than commercial, and maybe, I don't know, fly in a few hours before, but I digress. It has been confirmed. He had plane issues. They had to use a different plane. He changed in the car on the way to ACL from the airport in Austin. And, he made it. He ran right on. And, at least we know that supposedly, although there's no way to really confirm that, but that's confirmed by, I think, the founder of ACL. So he kind of has a vested interest, but I still love him. So I'll give him a 6 out of 10 because I was that sad. And also my feet hurt like a bitch, but that's to be expected. ACL's great. Loved it. Another person that was really good, was Odessa, but you already knew that if you know me. Like, woo, yee, so good, so good. Anyways, we'll move on from ACL talk and get started into the lovely world of Love is Blind. Love is Blind season 5 has been unhinged in the wildest of ways, and will go down as the least successful season. And I mean that literally by the numbers, at the very least. That's just reality. Obviously, for reality TV show fanatics and really anyone with a pulse, We love the drama, the mess, the chaos that comes with these types of shows, right? It's a good Schadenfreude. Let's remember Schadenfreude, seeing other people in discomfort or misfortune, and kind of finding interest or a little joy in that, which, you know, is what it is. But anyways, there is the flip side. It's almost too all over the place with very few, if any, likable protagonists. Okay, people. It's a reality. People. There's very few people that are like good humans in the season, or seem to be. Chris, who doesn't even, we just see him in the pods. He doesn't get engaged to anybody. One girl, Johnny, had broken up with him. And then when the guy who she broke up with him for rejected her, she came back to Chris. And luckily, Chris, you know what? He said no. He chose himself, and I support that. But yeah, him and maybe, yeah, that's probably about it, honestly. Milton, who we'll talk about later, there's the 24-year-old who's on this show. He seems like a good kid. He's still a baby, and he's being manipulated hardcore by Lydia, the person, his fiance, but we'll break that on down later. So there's usually at least one couple, usually just one, that you root for throughout the seasons of Love is Blind, but this season, there are zero. But you know what they say about failure? You learn a million times more from fails than from successes. Or it's something along those lines, right? While this is definitely true, Love is Blind only gave us three couples to follow to Mexico, with one of the three couples leaving halfway through Mexico, Taylor and JP, which needed to happen. It was a whole lot of mess. And there was like an off-camera dramatic moment between Uche and Aaliyah, who did not get engaged, but Aaliyah kind of left him in the pods right before he was going to propose. And then they got together and Love is Blind filmed it, yada, yada. But okay, so we're down to two couples in Mexico. And the plot thickens further now that we know that there was, in fact, a whole ass other couple. Renee, she was a cute blonde, really fun. She was shown a lot during the pod episodes. And a very large bald man that looks suspiciously like a Mr. Clean and a Duck Dynasty guy had a love child. His name is Carter. So Renee and Carter made it all the way to the altar and were engaged and came to Mexico. This is all confirmed by Renee, but Netflix cut them out entirely. We never saw what went down. We only saw them individually, much more of Renee than Carter. But we never saw what went down. And everyone's collective question is why? Especially for a season where they gave us so little and only showed two couples. It seems like a big missed opportunity. This isn't something necessarily new for Netflix, as there have been plenty of other couples in previous seasons too who got engaged but never made it into our viewing screens. It's likely a money thing, because it's expensive to send a whole camera crew to follow people around. So they don't necessarily follow everyone around. But what's weird is that Renee and Carter were literally in Mexico. So they were followed. They were confirmed to have been followed. Everything was recorded. But then they were just totally dropped on the production room editing floor. Just boop, cut. So from Business Insider, Renee said Netflix had called her a couple months before to let her know that she wasn't really going to be there. And what she said was, this is quotes, and I'll link this Business Insider article in here too. She, this is also kind of taken from her original interview, which is through Pop Sugar. Also, we'll link that in the show notes. So this is what she said. What I was told was, we'll just point blank say that Carter was awful, and we don't want you to have to relive that. That's just not going to be a big focus. They also said timing was an issue, so they decided to cut our story. That's what I was told. Very vague. Doesn't really, it says a lot without saying anything. First of all, too, NDAs are being broken all over the place. I mean, I assume as much because, especially this season, there are so many interviews from past contestants everywhere, which is like interesting to read, but we haven't even seen the altar yet. We haven't seen the reunion, which we don't have a lot of trust for. Kind of feel like this might be the end, but we'll see, because it's honestly one of my very favorite trashy reality TV shows to watch. But I digress. It was choppy at best. If you pay attention, you can kind of see little bald heads here and there of them trying to cut out Carter. But let's be real, the entirety of Love is Blind is a little bit shitty editing. I mean, that's why they have those classic like gold cups, is so that the fullness of their wine glasses don't give away the time frame, you know? And it appears, and from what we've heard, that there is a lot of wine and alcohol being served. There was an instance where all the women and the men, they go to a bridal salon or go get their tuxes fit or whatever for their weddings. And Renee is there because she was being filmed. And they just, the way that they edit this or flip the storyline is that she's there for another woman, Lydia, as a friend. But Renee's mom and her friends just tagged along too. It was laughable. Also, she was wearing white, so that'd be a pretty shitty friend thing to do. It's interesting that they would go so far as to have gone through the whole thing, recorded them, and then totally cut them out. So everyone is wondering what went down. So I took a trip on down to Reddit, because that's where secrets are told. Well, probably a lot of gossip too, but Redditors are hearing in the rumor mill, there's quite a few different options, that Carter may have cheated on Renee during filming while the two were living together and engaged. And even all of that, him cheating, was filmed, supposedly. This is all alleged. And that Carter was going berserk on production, told them if they used the footage that he would flip out, he'd kill. I don't know. He was being aggressive and violent. That was written a few different places, supposedly from Redditors that have credible sources, but I don't know. And Renee said she'll let us know what went down and tell her side of the story when she can. So I guess at least she's honoring, they're all honoring that part of the NDA, but I'm very curious to know. There's another theory that there is an alleged second lawsuit from a woman named Tran Dang, who was on their season 5. She and her fiance got together. They were filmed. They made it to Mexico. But sadly, she has recently filed a lawsuit because she's alleging that she was sexually assaulted by her ex-fiance, the guy on the show. She claims that production and kinetic content did nothing and didn't say anything. But Netflix has come back and said, we were never told of this. We believe survivors, essentially. We do, but we were just never told. So there was never something for us to do. So now that part becomes a he said, she said in a very unfortunate situation. I feel like that's such a risk in these types of shows where they go on to live together and you're essentially, you're strangers. Like, yeah, you know, it's just scary. I really, really hope that she's healing from that, and that if that is true, and I believe her, that, you know, she gets the justice that she deserves, and that's really sad. Her fiance's name was Thomas Smith, but they're not featured in any of the cast photos or in the show at all. So it's very confusing. It could be that they were there and maybe they were filming with Renee and Carter a lot, and so it was harder to edit out. But on top of that allegation, she is also alleging and suing for false imprisonment were kind of what we've heard before in the previous lawsuit. So she's already sued Kinetic Content, which is the production company that working on Love is Blind. And she's saying that they wouldn't let them out of the house, well, out of the recording studio unless they asked permission to do so, even when going to the restroom and feeding them alcohol and no water or food. But the show creator has put out this statement, and I'll read it to you. This is on People magazine. If anybody ever came to us and said they felt unsafe in any way, we would immediately remove them from the experiment and talk to them and try to get to the bottom of it. He says, unfortunately, in this case, that kind of sentiment was never addressed to us in any way, nor was any alleged wrongdoing brought to our attention ever. He also calls Deng's false imprisonment claims preposterous, as participants are always free to walk away from the show, like what has been done in the past with previous cast members, and most recently in this season with Aaliyah Cosby, Taylor Rue, and Jared J.P. Pierce. They say, we support and stand with victims of sexual assault, but Ms. Deng's claims against the producers are meritless. We document the independent choices of adults who volunteer to participate in a social experiment. Their journey is not scripted, nor is it filmed around the clock. We have no knowledge or control over what occurs in private living spaces when not filming, and participants may choose to end their journey at any time. It kind of goes on and it essentially repeats what they're saying there, but that's a real shitty situation. And I kind of am of the belief that where there's smoke, there's fire. And if this is the second lawsuit against them, that says something. At the same time, I mean, it's kind of when they're filming the pod scene, it makes sense. They have to like, they don't want them to intermingle when they're going to the restroom or something, because the quarters, they're in the same like recording studio. You know what I mean? Like in a big, it's a big place, but they're adults and they're choosing to set on to this show. So I guess in the same manner that when celebrities are frustrated with or annoyed with paparazzi or having too much attention or not getting their privacy, kind of makes me feel the same way about that, where it's like, you kind of knew what you're getting into, but at the same time, you don't until you're in this situation and you're in the experience, and everybody has a right to their, you know, fundamental human rights. So, yeah, potato, potato, I don't know. But it makes real life is turning out to be a little bit more, if not just as dramatic as reality TV. We are now waiting on the final episodes this Friday to see the two couples, Izzy and Stacy, and Milton and Lydia, throw their classically bizarre Love is Blind weddings, in which it's very unclear what exactly will go down. We've got, of the two, Izzy and Stacy. Izzy is, he had connections with three other women. So obviously Stacy, the one he's engaged to now, Johnny, who was a lawyer, and he has repeatedly just bashed her whenever the cast has come together and they're recording it. And in the beginning, she was talking a little bit of shit about Stacy because she knew that they were going after the same guy. But I mean, damn, they were bullying her straight up. He just pulled her aside to tell her she was sketchy. They kept using the word sketchy. And I don't really get that. It's just interesting. The word sketchy. And that was all he said. It was like, everybody knows and thinks you're sketchy. Said the word sketchy about 20 times. And then when his fiance Stacy kind of took a turn going at her randomly, while they're all sitting together, then as they're alone, as he says to Stacy, it really turned me on to see you get into her, or like to see you really coming at her. It's like, ooh, you're turned on by bullying. That's cute. So maybe they do deserve each other, but I don't think Stacy's that bad. I think for a man who does not own any plates or silverware, just has paper plates, He's got a long ways to go. Especially for a woman whose dad was like, love is blind, sure, but love also likes to take first class, you know? So he may need to get plates first before he moves on to planes. Yeah. Then the second couple is Milton and Lydia. Milton is the young 24-year-old, super tall. He seems cool. He's kind of more quiet, but he's very chill personality. And then you've got Lydia, who is a personality. She's got a big one. She's loud, and she tells you that. That's how she describes herself. So you know something there. And not to mention Uche, guy who did not end up getting engaged to anybody, comes back on the show to claim that Lydia followed him on to Love is Blind because they did see each other, which we had found out in the first few released episodes, which was kind of crazy. They had like slept together, and then she tells the girl, it's just, it's a mess. It's almost too much to dive into and cover before it's just like, what? You have to get out like a, you know, a thesaurus and a dictionary and a map to, you know, follow other people. You know what I'm saying? I will spare you the confusion. But the two couples, Izzy and Stacy, Milton and Lydia, those final episodes of them making it to the altar will be coming out on Friday. So we shall see how that goes down. It's always interesting, but I'm honestly almost more interested in knowing why Renee and Carter were totally cut out of the show than I am to know if they get married, because I feel like neither couple should get married. But what do I know, right, you guys? What do I know? So we're going to move on down to the next reality TV show. Golden Bachelor continues to just drive spearheads into women's hearts all around the nation as we see just how far we lowered the bar in the dating world over the last few decades. Gary over here is showing more emotion during the first few rose ceremonies than we've seen probably in the last 10 or so bachelors collectively. And he printed out a photo and had it framed and gave it to one of the women, Ellen, which was really cute. Well, meanwhile, these days we are simply wooed if a man texts you after a first date. Full stop, end of sentence. Doesn't matter what the text says. We will take it today. Some things never change because these 60-plus-year-old women are living in bedrooms full of bunk beds and shared tiny closets for a man. So, yeah. Which also, producers, can you do better? You know, watching these ladies move into the bachelor mansion only to realize what exactly these living arrangements entailed was rough. Imagine Tammy going from her expensive Palm Beach home, decked out in restoration hardware and California king bed, to summer camp rickety bunk beds outfitted in twin XL sheets from Target. At least The Bachelor is consistent and has maintained a few of its core tenets throughout the season so far, though. One being to absolutely meddle for drama and amp up the cheesiness, which is something we all know and do we love? I don't know, but it's part of The Bachelor. They're keeping it consist. That was me abbreviating consistent, but it doesn't have like the power I wanted it to, you know, keep it consist. No, it just feels like I need to say something after. Anyways, so what happened in episode 2? The first one-on-one date goes to Teresa. She's a cute, small, I think she's from New Jersey, brown-haired woman. And Gary, for this date, is given an apparently faulty, old-school, like vintage convertible, with only one functioning headlight to drive them to their dinner. Now, on the California highway that Gary has never driven on, while being filmed, with the top off of the convertible, like, terrifying. So they're all filming. No one's stepping in. He has one little headlight just flashing, but they're recording that, so don't you worry. I was on the edge of my seat. Hated that moment, but they did have a cute little moment where while Gary was like, I've never driven in California. This is pretty scary. She just like gives him a little shoulder squeeze, a little shoulder rub. And it was cute. He looked at her and said, thank you. And they had a moment and it was really cute. He said later on that it put him at ease, just that one word. So, but, ABC question. Why are we putting geriatric people behind the wheel on the I-10? I-10. You would say the 10 if you're really Los Angelino. But anyways, why are we doing this? Why are we putting them behind the wheel of a car on the California highway they've never driven? They're already overcoming an inevitable challenge to begin with. Just kidding. I had to match The Bachelor's complete tunnel vision on age when literally all of the ads, I shit you not, were AARP, Medicare. I saw that one too. And age-defying skincare. Yeah, I think it's a little bit, I worked in the advertising industry for my life, but, so maybe a little bit more honed in and focused on the ads than the average person, but it seemed a little bit tongue-in-cheek to me, a little bit, let's like slow her down, you know, after randomly deciding to Google AARP, it came to my attention that they are, providing Golden Bachelor recaps on the AARP website. So they're really driving that baby home. You know what I'm saying? Despite the terrifying travel experience, Gary and Teresa arrive at a cute little diner that looks like it's straight out of the 50s. Another tongue-in-cheek moment. And a cheesy violation in my humble opinion, but turns out that Gary is a restaurant owner or was a restaurant owner. And so it brought him back to some really good memories. And they shared a little chocolate milkshake with two straws and whatever. And, then a flash mob breaks out to Don't Stop Believing after Gary so cutely and intently says, I don't know if I'll find love again, but to have the opportunity is great. He had lost as we've talked about a little bit before, he had lost his first wife of 42 years, Tony, and turns out Teresa also has lost a spouse too. So they shared that moment together. But as this flash mob starts singing Don't Stop Believing, I almost turned off the TV. It was too much. We got the waiters, the waitresses, the people eating there, supposedly the hired actor to start dancing, and it was just like, yeah. But of course I didn't because I love Gary. At the end of the day, I think Gary gets a little bit overexcited because he literally says that she could be the one that he spends the rest of his days with. Ooh, we've seen this with other bachelors in the past, and it doesn't usually end up well. We've seen this movie, we've watched it play out, you know. I do think, well, really, we know that he's going to fall in love with multiple women from the teaser of like the rest of the season on. So at least we got that. I mean, you know what? Age is but a number, and they're just as intrigued in finding love as anyone. Also, nursing homes like are rampant in STDs because they have so much, sex. In their late stages. So anyways, next we have the group date, which is yet another bachelor tenant, the photo shoot date. So all the women are given options of things to dress up in. They had like Oktoberfest looking dresses, hippies, motorcycle, I don't know, supposed to be hardcore looks, and then wedding dresses, of course. And Our friend Nancy, she started to get emotional as she put on the wedding dress because the last time she had worn it was at her real ass wedding years ago to her husband, her late husband. And I think that's something that maybe The Bachelor isn't thinking about is there are a lot more, that's a lot more sensitive, you know, when you go on early young bachelor seasons, bachelorette seasons, like these people, there a few have been married or whatever, or gotten divorced or have lost their spouse, but those are usually the rare occasions. So I don't know if putting on wedding dresses after you have before is a great idea. They end up having a conversation, Nancy and Gary, about it. And Nancy said something that was actually so beautiful. And she said something along the lines of, I have sadness and joy in the remembering, but I still have hope. And I feel like the ability to understand and embrace duality is such a mature experience and is such a mature thing. Understanding that two things can be true at once, you know? And I like that Gary hasn't really brought up too many times. It may sound weird at first, but I like that Gary hasn't brought up too many times, you know, his late wife, Toni. At least, of course, in the first episode, he tells the story and he gets emotional and it's really sad and it's really triggering the amount of times that I've wanted to cry. And The Bachelor is not okay. But he's really, to see Gary, the way he listens to these women is really beautiful and really sweet. And that he is, it's so genuine of a person. And I think it gives everybody a little bit of hope, like seeing something we don't see all the time of people 60 plus finding love again. And I think that that is lovely and beautiful and a reminder that, you know what? There is no such thing as a timeline and, oh, I'm 30, I should be this, I should be that, and how that's changing and we're finally kind of coming to terms with that. But I digress and we'll move on from the mushy-gushy, sort of. I think that Leslie, she is the girl who dated Prince, or Prince wrote a song about her, Sexy Dancer. I think she's a front runner, no doubt. No doubt at all. Gary thinks so too. He said, you know, she showed off that she had hearing aids as well in both ears. And that was a sweet moment. And I think she's going to be around for a while. And Faith, who got the first impression rose to begin with, we're already starting to see she may be falling into a bachelor trope of where they kind of self-sabotage because they got worried because they had their like one-on-one or whatever was early on or, and they feel like they're forgetting about them, which is probably a natural thing to feel when you're living with 12 plus other women that are dating the same man. Sounds horrible, if you ask me, but I think nobody loves that. So anyways, they have the group date and Nancy gets the rose. Then later on, the ladies celebrate Gary's birthday and they have like some pool scene. And it is truly interesting to see all of the different personalities and interests. You just get a lot more background, at least this season, on these ladies. When there's not so much drama, but let's be real. Real Housewives of Beverly Hills, there are women 60 plus on those shows for sure, despite what the Botox is telling you. So we know that people can be dramatic too. I'm kind of waiting for that, you know, once people get a little bit more feelings involved. I want to see the drama. It's a great, I really like this offshoot of the franchise, but three ladies end up getting sent home, Peggy, Natasha, and Jeannie, and a girl who's on their marina had to leave for family reasons, but all to say that leaves us with 12 women, and apparently we do have some good drama coming up. The teasers are excellent. If they don't deliver on the teasers, that's pretty Bachelor thing to do, but you know, regardless, I will be here to break it down for you. We're quickly taken back to the quintessential Bachelor Nation series, Bachelor in Paradise, directly following Golden Bachelor. It's a real whiplash. But to be real, I do not watch 3 hours of Bachelor content in one sitting because I think I'd lose it. I think my three brain cells would like start spinning around in circles and just whoop. But I do watch it all. So, well, most of the time. And I'm just doing my job, basically, right? So I can watch it all for you. You're welcome. You're welcome. So Bachelor in Paradise is also on its second episode. It's another one of those, there's so many different players involved in here, but the kind of big moments of the episode was that former Bachelorette Hannah Brown graced our screens and started pulling them in one by one, leaving everyone confused if she was now dating or not, or what she was there for. The women are freaking out, and the men are freaking out too, probably hoping she is. Although we all have access to the World Wide Web and Instagram. But at the time of filming, she was not engaged. Hannah Brown is now engaged. So she was there to really just, quote, test the relationships. And she holds this paradise bonfire. It's kind of asking, seeing what guys were open to dating around and yada, yada. And like most tests on reality shows, producer fed tests tend to fail for many. One being Brayden, who was in the last Bachelorette season on Charity's season. You'll remember him because he's the guy who wears like really huge ass earrings. And he came in like a kimono. I don't know. He wants to be like him cool, like Harry Styles, but he's not Harry Styles. He's still hot, but he's not Harry Styles hot, you know? He is, at least at the time, coupled up with Kat from Zach's season. Basically, Brayden's like all in, and Kat dropped a few names that she hopes comes down to the beach, which usually means that they will. And we see in the preview that one of them will be, so they probably won't be lasting long. And Jess, Glitter Jess, and Blake Moynes, who's been on this TV show in different one capacity or another, like four different times. Seems like a really sweet, good guy. But at some point, you got to ask yourself, if something's not working, maybe switch up the strategy, you know? I don't know. That's what I would do. But he seems to be open. Jess is not. We'll see. They seem very cute together. We do know that Blake Moynes' ex, Katie Thurston, will be showing up at Paradise. We don't know if she's dating or what, but that'll be interesting. And I really think that Rachel Recchia, who was a former Bachelorette, is being done real dirty. Like, they made her come onto the beach. She was the first person that arrived. And in the past, if any former Bachelorettes have come on, which has only been, I think, one time before, Becca Kufrin. And now she's married and had a baby. I don't know. Basically, they're not giving her any screen time. Two guys that made it very far on Rachel's season that she shared with Gabby come down to the beach, and we see no discussion. There's no interaction that's shown between them, which is weird, seeing as they were about to get engaged, and we just, boop, it's like, didn't happen. I don't know. Anyway, many love triangles. Min had the rose this week, and Peter was the last guy. We don't know who Peter is, but we know now that he's a villain. He's not Pilot Pete, so something in the water with these Peters, I tell ya. But Brooklyn, Greer, and Kat, not Brayden's cat, different cat, all go home after a wild card choice. Peter chooses this girl, Olivia, who I don't even know what season she was on, and they don't have a romantic interest, I don't think. I don't know. Potato, potato. You get me. So something else that is going on this week in real life. Well, that's all real life, but you know, real life. Sam Bankman-Fried, who was once a super wealthy, highly regarded guy in the cryptocurrency industry. He had two companies. One is FTX and the other is Alameda Research. And he is only, now he's 30 years old. He had his girlfriend at the time become CEO. She's like the small mousy girl who was super young. Poor girl. Well, maybe, I don't know. we'll see. But she runs Alameda Research. He's CEO of FTX. And basically what people do is it's an exchange. So, and bear with me here because it's going to be the worst explanation, but it's simplified. It's maybe not the worst. In the crypto industry, it's FTX and Alameda are like an exchange where people like you and me will deposit their money and to either buy, sell, whatever, their cryptocurrency into different like versions of that currency or whatever, like Ethereum, or I think that's the only one I know. Clearly, I'm not into crypto. But they have billions and billions of dollars there. Alameda was failing. So he's taking people's money that they allegedly deposited into FTX and funneling it into Alameda, like billions of dollars, to then also spend that money to give to political parties, political donations. They lived in a house in the Bahamas. They lived in New Providence in the Bahamas, Nassau. And it's a nice-ass place. Like, things are going well until an investor from Binance who had supported and loaned some money to them got freaked out and by something they were unsure. And he tells everybody he's pulled out and he has concerns about the stability of FTX and Alameda. And as soon as they say that, FTX, people are rushing to pull their money out of FTX. And when they do that, that money is not all there. They spent about $14 billion and people's money's gone. So, rightfully so, he's been arrested and the trial is going on right now. I give you that little brief snippet because I think it's interesting too. The girlfriend, his ex-girlfriend, Caroline Ellison, they're no longer dating, maybe obviously or not obviously, but they're no longer dating and she just came in and she is currently testifying against him. And two of Sam's co-CEOs and CFO have also testified against him. So he's facing up to 110 years in jail. So it's not looking good for Sam. And it's just, I feel like another example of hubris and greed that just drives people to make these crazy decisions that, my opinion, it's like all this shit that people pull, like the truth always comes out, you know? Like, I've been bitten in the ass by that. You've been bitten on the ass by that. So, you know, there's been some time, whether it was when you were little, you know, because you don't do that anymore, where you get caught. Like, you'll always get caught. When people cheat, I think that's, like, someone's going to find out at some point, in my opinion. Like, it's never hidden forever. So that's just my thought. That's what keeps me out of jail. Besides my moral compass and faith and all of that, like also is you can't get away with anything these days. You know, you just can't. So keep an eye on that. And lastly, we just got some news. We, the internet, the people of the internet, got the news that Jada Pinkett Smith and Will Smith have actually been separated for 7 years. I didn't realize this was news. I kind of thought that this was known, but apparently it's not. When Will Smith gives the classic slap to Chris Rock, Chris Rock had asked Jada out before. So that's where the real anger was coming from. You know what I'm saying? So that's interesting. But Will Smith's still out here doing his thing. I loved Will Smith's music career, side note. It was great. There were two solid songs that came out of his music career. Switch. Ooh la la la. Yeah, but you can also just pull up Spotify instead of me singing it. So I'll let you do that. But that's what we have for this week. I hope you have enjoyed as much as I have enjoyed relaying this information to you. If you've enjoyed listening to this, please, please subscribe and give me a rating, a review on anywhere that you are streaming this from now. Tell a friend, tell your mama, your sister, your papa, your side piece, whoever, you know, and share this podcast with them. I would love that. And you can follow us at Easily Entertained Pod on Instagram, with a website that is in the works, coming very soon, and more guests as well. Thanks for listening. Have a great, great rest of your week, and stay entertained, homies. We're workshopping that one, yeah. We're definitely workshopping that one. Love y'all. Bye.